Welcome back, listeners.
Welcome.
To the last, the final, finito episode of Cleopatra. We hope you're still with us. We hope you're still with us. We just want to start actually with a little call out to Kevin Hennessy.
Cheers, Kev.
He contacted us on Twitter to say he really enjoyed the show, and his favourite show was Ancient Special Forces.
Ancient Special Forces, that's one of my favourites to record, actually. And I tell you what, listeners, a little quick flash poll here. Why don't you tell us what your favourite episode is? If we can get some sort of consistency across what your favourite episodes are, we'll try and give you more of... That type of thing.
So if you like the blood and gore, or do you like the things like prohibition and witchcraft, or do you like the biopsies of individual people, which we've done? Say, I guess there's three types of podcasts that we do.
Not so much biopsies, because that would be a little bit macabre, would it? But biographies. But biopsies is basically dissecting famous people literally.
Well, we are
limb from limb.
But anyhow,
historical figure's liver looks much like another.
Well, indeed. So once again, it's myself, Matt Nelson, the Pharaoh of ancient Egypt, and Wayne Bridgman, the chief eunuch.
Well, I suppose chief eunuch, listeners, that would explain why I'm so large and strong and muscular.
Indeed,
although,
it would.
Bizarrely, unlike most eunuchs, I do have genitals.
Yeah, so wonderful.
Got so you there.
So you did indeed. You perhaps answered that in more depth than I expected, but thanks very much.
Now you know.
So the plot to murder, let's crack on. The plot to murder Julius Caesar was a well-conceived scheme. However, listeners, the plan for post his murder was an utter shambles. Mm. The assassins believed his death would resurrect the old Roman spirit and faith in the Republic would be restored. Unfortunately, while the conspiracy had been well planned, the exit strategy was not...
Perhaps we can liken those to the plans for Brexit we're seeing in the UK currently.
We'll vote out Brexit, but we won't have any plans. For a start, they should have killed Mark Antony, number one, but they underestimated him. They thought, cut off the head of the snake, you'll end the rebellion. But this snake had multiple heads. Yeah. It was a hydra, you needed to take out the lead lieutenants, and that was principally Mark Antony. Octavian was also a factor. He was Julius Caesar's stepbrother.
Stepson.
And he and Mark Antony would eventually fill the vacuum left by Caesar. So two of the most notable conspirators, Brutus and Cassius, of course, who we left last episode, have fled to the east to escape Rome.
So both Mark Antony and Octavian... each believed, of course, as they would do, being powerful Romans, that they were the rightful heir to lead what essentially was the government following Caesar's assassination. An old and trusted general, Marcus Lepidus, gathered both men, and over 2 days they formed what was initially known as an association of convenience, shall we say. But we'll know it as the Second Triumvirate.
Three men holding the majority of power... in the old Republic, similar to that Caesar, Crassus and Pompey had, mentioned in the first episode. Now, these guys were far from friendly terms with each other. Mark Antony and Octavian would soon undergo their differences. They had every reason to distrust one another. Before they agreed to form the Triumvirate, they fought each other in military campaigns across northern Italy.
Yeah, and Antony further fueled the discord between them, actually, when he blocked Octavian's, who was Caesar's adopted son, as we said, he blocked access to his stepfather's money.
Cheeky little bugger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In addition, the general, Lepidus, the third and most ineffective of the three, actually, was named chief priest of all things by Antony, although the appointment was supposed to go to Octavian.
Yeah, Antony was constantly, in the early days, getting one over on Octavian. Something he might learn to
older, more experienced.
Something you might learn to regret. Mm. The Senate now saw Antony as another dangerous tyrant, and his continued attempts to seize control of the government after Caesar's demise had brought the ire of the Senate, causing them to declare him a public enemy.
Yes, and because of his behaviour, Antony had angered a number of influential Roman citizens, for example, Marcus Tullius Cicero, the Roman statesman and poet, of course. He wrote a number of scathing essays against Antony. Antony hit Antony with a major leaflet campaign. Brutal. In speaking to the Senate, in fact, Cicero said about Antony...
Now listen here, I beg you, Senators. I do not mean to... the personal and domestic scandals created by Antony's disgusting improprieties... but to the evil, godless way in which he has undermined us all, and our fortunes, and our whole country.
Blaming him for everything, basically, isn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't a great fan of him, really. The pen being mightier than the sword, in this case, was soon to become the sword was more mightier than the pen, because obviously Cicero won't last that much longer.
Yeah. And the pen and the sword were both mightier than Cicero's voice in the end.
Yeah. This victory of Cicero's in the Senate would be short-lived, as Mark Antony was insistent that Cicero be murdered or he would not sign up to the Second Triumvirate.
Ooh.
Octavian, who was a fan of Cicero's and Cicero had helped him out, sadly agreed, though he was, as I said, fond of him. So
power politics, isn't it?
Yet another famous of Rome's great men die and the Triumvirate is born. Cicero had always lived by personal code. The greatest good was to live in service of the state and oppose anyone who threatened it. He predicted, rightly, that Antony was an enemy of Rome and should be killed with Caesar. Perhaps he was right. Well, certainly this podcaster believes he was.
Right, well, Antony certainly was a bloodthirsty bugger, actually. Though probably a man of his time, I think they were in those days. I mean, Octavian will scheme and murder his way to the top as well, of course. The three men were united in their desire to avenge, Matt, Caesar's death. And that plunged the Republic into yet another civil war. Despite his youth, the 19-year-old Octavian had the support of a significant portion of the army, actually.
Of course, anybody who loves hearing the name Caesar, he himself is a Caesar.
That's right.
So he will get Caesar's men.
Yeah, and if they were loyal to... Caesar.
The power of a name, listeners, the power of a name.
Which was his dad. They'd think, you know, that blood and spirit had been passed down to his son
Octavian. Of course, I know the power of a name being right. A Nelson.
Yes, right, yes, of course.
The great Admiral Nelson, who I unfortunately share no family history with whatsoever.
Oh, you've done your homework.
Yeah. But anyhow, we digress.
Well, with many of the... of the people on the enemies list, in inverted commas, eliminated, the triumvirate, the trio, turned their attention to Brutus, Cassius, and Sextus Pompey.
Who, of course, is son Pompey's
of Pompey, son. That's right, yes.
The surviving son of Pompey.
Yeah. And in June of 42 BCE, Brutus and Cassius met at Sardis, city Sardis, of course, which is in western Anatolia, isn't
it? Anatolia, yeah. Lovely place.
And not so lovely in those days.
No.
With lepers everywhere, with Lepidus in Sicily, Octavian and Antony crossed the Adriatic Sea and met the two conspirators in Philippi, actually, which is in...
Or Philippi.
Right.
I don't know how you pronounce it.
Well, what we do know, Matt, is that it's in eastern Macedonia. And what we also know is when they went there, they met for bloody battle.
Bloody battle indeed. Now, with Octavian ill...
Yeah, well, he got a constant case of the shits on the eve of war, apparently.
Yeah, he was a bit nervous. Octavian
Nelly.
Was a great speaker.
Oh, what are you
politician.
Doing, Octavian? You're a nervous Nelly. You've shat your armour again.
And he was... unfortunately, this was familiar with Octavian. He was not a great fighter. In fact, that was something that plagued him all the way through. But he had Agrippa, and Agrippa was a great fighter, and he was his general, and all his successes were really down to Agrippa on the battlefield. Octavian, very skilled, though, in the Senate chamber.
Yeah, so Nemo.
As you say, he's got the shits on the evil war, so he doesn't fight.
Doesn't
like
it.
He kind of hangs back in his tent. Antony, though, wins this on his own. Cassius, fearing capture, had himself killed by a slave.
Bit over the top.
Brutus escaped only later to commit suicide.
Right.
Now, Sextus Pompey, the son of the legendary Commander Pompey we mentioned earlier, had originally been outlawed under the Second Triumvirate. He escaped, so he was the only one to survive, okay, basically, to Sicily, eventually making a pact with the Triumvirate, actually.
Ah.
Now, this podcast is not actually about Rome, it's about Cleopatra. But you can't tell one without telling the story of the other.
They are inextricably linked, of course.
However, we would go to a fifth podcast if we gave this next part all the details, perhaps, that it deserves, but we're not. We're actually going to miss out a number of this.
We'll be merciful on you listeners.
Yeah. So after the war was concluded, peace reigned, but Rome was seriously in debt. When you have a civil war for decades on end, that tends to happen.
You're spending the war twice.
So in short, the empire was divided up. Antony was to rule the east, Octavian was to rule the west, and Africa was given to Lepidus. So Antony settled in Tarsus. Now in 41 BC, Antony summoned Cleopatra to come to him in the city of Tarsus. Yeah.
Well, and like all the other rulers of that sort of region, Cleopatra needed to be sure that her grasp... She had basically needed to have both hands around the rod of power.
The throbbing rod of power.
Yeah, that had to be confirmed. And the triumvirs would adhere to the recognition they had given to her joint rule with Caesarion, if you remember. Her kingdom was the greatest single source of grain, incredibly important grain, of course, and money, in fact, in the Eastern Mediterranean. So it was obviously a prime concern for Antony himself to ensure that he could draw on these resources, both for the moment and for the upcoming and inevitable war against those rascals in Parthia, which, like Caesar, he planned to make a successful conquest of. So questions have been raised, actually, over the conduct during the struggle with the conspirators. So the pharaoh herself, remember she's a pharaoh because she only would have married her bloody son... so that converted her from a queen into a pharaoh.
We are family. Bum, bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum. We certainly are. Had promised much to Cassius and the Senate's clause, of course, even as she had not delivered anything yet. While her attempt to join Mark Antony and co with a fleet had failed, too. She seemingly tried to placate both sides, actually. She was a bit of a political juggler here. But she didn't really commit fully to either, but didn't give enough away for them to say, hang on a minute, you're colluding with the other side here. So yeah. That's probably quite a good survival skill.
Yeah.
At the time.
She was sort of beating off both sides and making sure that none of them got upset with her. So when the war ended,
yeah, well, she was,
she couldn't be accused of supporting anyone.
Yeah, well, she was very much, she was sort of satisfying two guys at the same time.
Yeah. Now, whilst Antony was many things, he was not stupid. Oh, no, he was not stupid. And it's worth remembering that an alternative to Cleopatra existed for the throne of Egypt, and Cleopatra was fully aware of this. Antony, the little rascal, had paid a long visit to Ephesus. Now, after her parade in Caesar's triumph, remember Arsinoe? She was imprisoned in Ephesus for her part in the Alexandria War, and thus that is where she had remained. So Antony had visited her. It is inconceivable that he did not, at some point, make contact with Arsinoe whilst there, or at least her representatives. Antony had backed Arsinoe's claim, actually, in 44 BC, and there was no assurance that he would not now decide that he would like to replace her. Remember, she is the younger sister. Cleopatra is the older one. And it might allow him to exploit Egypt and Cyprus resources more effectively.
Yes. Yes, he was definitely more attracted to Arsinoe, wasn't he? Yeah. So Cleopatra had a potential problem on her hands here, because Antony sent Quintus Delius to Alexandria to summon the pharaohess. Delius had already defected from Dolabella to Cassius.
Now, Dolabella was one of Mark Antony's generals
in the previous war. Yeah, and then after that, Cassius to Antony. He's a real turncoat, this chap.
So, yeah, you couldn't trust this guy further than you could throw him, basically, this Quintus Delius.
And he claimed to have realised at once that Antony could be swept away by a woman like Cleopatra.
Yeah.
And guessing this would happen and that she would win his favour, he decided that it would be advantageous for him to assist the young queen.
Yes.
Pharaoh, not queen. Denius encouraged her to dazzle Antony Mac. She's got the green makeup stuff on.
Look into my eyes. She's not around my eyes. Look into my eyes. Look into my eyes. Woo.
Difficult not to with her very piercing eyes.
Yes.
Assuring her that he could readily be persuaded to do what she wanted.
Yeah.
Perhaps he simply said, the guy thinks with his groin and stomach, not his head.
Cleopatra did not hurry, though, to Tartarus. Oh, no. A succession of letters arrived from Antony, each one getting slightly more demanding, I suspect.
Desperate.
That she hastened, but she ignored them all. Determined to appear at the moment of her choosing in the most spectacular style she could. Mm. She wanted to make a memorable entry.
Right.
And indeed, Antony probably was keen to make a memorable entry as well. Drawing on her family's long tradition of building luxurious pleasure craft, she transferred into a specially prepared ship for the final stage of her journey up the river into Tartarus.
Oh, right, well, now picture this barge, this luxury barge, listeners. Now, you've got the big, wide River Nile with its blue waters to try and ignore the crocodiles. Lovely sunshine, blue sky.
The smell of decay.
Fish. But manure. Never mind that. The barge, listeners. Focus on the barge.
Waste products.
Its sails were of rich purple fabric. Very expensive purple dye, of course. The prow was of gold. And the rowers plied silver-tipped, no less, oars into the water, accompanied by the music of flutes, oboes and lyres.
Happy days.
Yes, her father would no doubt have been very proud of such a performance and wonderful craft. Everything about this craft, Matt, was lavish. There were like grapes laying around. There's all sorts of like gold filigree everywhere. It's luxurious. There's incense in generous quantities.
Yeah, perhaps some velvet embroidered seat.
We certainly cannot rule out velvet embroidered seating, Matt.
Yeah, that's the height, height of of sophistication.
It is one of those days. I'd be quite happy with that.
Yeah.
So yes, that incense smell sort of wafted, along with other fine smells and oils, onto the banks of the river as it went past. People couldn't believe their eyes. Look at Cleopatra, they said. She's so fancy.
Cleopatra herself reclined beneath a gold-embroidered canopy, adorned like a painting of Aphrodite. Flanked by slave boys, each made to resemble Eros, who called her with fans. Yep. Our good old friend Plutarch, who wrote after the events, of course, described them thus. Wayne?
She came sailing up the river in a barge with gilded stern, and outspread sails of purple, while oars of silver beat time to the music of flutes and fifes and harps. She herself lay all along under a canopy, a cloth of gold, dressed as Venus in a picture. And beautiful young boys, like painted gimps, cupids, stood on each side to fan her. Her maids were dressed like sea nymphs and graces, some steering at the rudder, some working at the ropes.
Oh, by gum.
So it soon had the impact that Cleopatra had intended on anyone who could consider themselves to be an onlooker. Plutarch tells us that the crowd quickly gathered to watch the progress of this glorious, gleaming royal barge along the river. Antony was supposedly receiving petitions in front of a large gathering in Tarsus itself. Sounds pretty boring. Then rumour started to spread that the goddess Aphrodite herself, she was on her way, and people began slipping away to see the wondrous spectacle. And a wondrous spectacle it was, Matt. And in the end, Antony, he had to go have a look, didn't he?
Oh, he's left there, wasn't he? He was left hanging.
Right.
He was, he was expecting her to come to him, and so he had to go and come to her in the end.
Typical. Well, him and his household.
Clever girl.
So they were left on their own there, basically, and they had to trail behind, I guess.
Everyone else.
Yeah, feeling a little bit upstage. Like, we're supposed to be the big cheeses here.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the cry went up that Aphrodite had come to feast with Dionysus for the good of all Asia.
Now, Antony sent an invitation for Cleopatra to join him for dinner. She declined, of course. This was her way. We've noticed this, listeners.
She's very coy, like a card.
She's definitely playing this as a game. Mm. And instead, she suggested that he join her. 2-0 to the Macedonian queen. Well done.
3 points.
The banquet that followed was carefully arranged. You know, clusters of lamps everywhere. The luxury and opulence and spectacle of the Ptolemaic court was in full display in pomp and ceremony at this place, right? So she basically, she got out the nice silver.
Yeah.
And, you know, got out the nice
put on a real show
as well, yeah. On the following night, Antony entertained the queen at another banquet. But in spite of their best efforts, the household could not match that of the royal display of Cleopatra's.
Yes, and not only did she know how to put on a bit of a show, Cleopatra was clever and witty, and is said to have lowered the tone of her humour to suit Antony's tastes.
Oh, do regale us with yet more of your fascinating tales of adventure, General Antony.
Yeah, sure. So, here I was, right, stalled in hand.
I need more wine.
I was looking at
more
the ghouls,
wine.
Right? Looking at the ghouls thinking, am I going to get out of this mess? But now do I see up in the ridge, it's only bloody Messines Tallreeks with his elite guard. I'm thinking I'm done for here.
Oh dear,
I think
yes.
Publis has sold me right up the Swanee here, so yeah. I reach my sword.
More
right.
Wine, Antony. You seem to have sloshed some of the wine over the floor while you were gesticulating wildly whilst reenacting that sword fight with some of the ghouls. It's a lovely wine, actually. A very vintage. I hope you appreciated it. We have only one bottle left.
Yeah, sweet. Fill her up, darling. It's thirsty work, the storytelling. Anyway, right, I'm thinking shit it. I'm on my Todd behind enemy lines, right? They've got these three geezers. They're running at me. They're screaming in their common tongue like banshees from hell. So I think shit on this. I draw my sword.
Oh, I see right. The main course is being served. Maybe you should get off the table and put that sword away now. I mean, I'd hate you to fall on the food. It's gorgeous recipe. It's the very last spotted lion in the world. Its meat, Antony, is beyond compare.
I'll eat anything meat. You got any ketchup? Right, so where was I? I had my sword out, thinking I'll take that big bugger first, and I'll wear his balls as earrings.
Oh, Jesus and just Christ. Christ. More wine! More wine, please. Thank you. Poor Egypt. Well, Gaius said you were walking with a limp at the end of that battle.
Yeah, well, I kicked him so hard in the balls I broke my foot.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, there I was, right, sword in hand.
So Cleopatra's now around 28 years old, which is at an age when the beauty of a woman is at its most dazzling and her intellectual powers are at a height. Well, according to Plutarch, that is. Remember, people died young.
Mm-hmm.
She was confident. She was sophisticated. Her charisma was probably even more powerful than mine.
No, very modest of you. Very reasonable thing to say.
Yeah, and so therefore it's unsurprising that Antony found her both attractive and bit of a challenge, shall we say. A bit high maintenance.
Well, she needed to win over the man who could confirm or depose her, though. So it is reasonable to believe that she deliberately set out to seduce Mr. Antony.
Right.
And that from an early on, he wanted her basically as his lover, so she was successful. You know.
Well, she made his gladius hard, didn't she? She was a player of games.
She was indeed. As with the first encounter with Caesar, both the queen and the triumphant Antony were no doubt aware that desire and political advantage mingled as potent bedfellows.
Yes, that was.
That each hoped to seduce the other and gain from them something political from the encounter.
Yeah. And it's also believed, actually, that Cleopatra had only ever given herself to one other lover, and he'd been the most powerful man in the world, of course. For Antony, it was a measure of his own importance, not impotence, that was proven, that the queen might be available to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could bag a queen.
Yeah, he's the big cheese.
Yeah.
Like a hunter tracking a sort of a prized big cat, he was keen to feel something on the end of his sword or spear. Shaft, let's say. Settle on shaft.
Yes, if Cleopatra, good old Cleopatra, had a Tinder profile in the modern world of online dating, it would have stated, don't swipe right unless you rule at least one kingdom, control one army, or have at the very least concrete plans to usurp power from a local regent.
Quite specific requirements.
Oh, and you must have your own teeth.
Yeah.
Although not essential, the first three are more important than that, probably. Antony ticked the boxes, and he was in his early 40s at the time, closer in her age than her first lover had been. Of course, Caesar was
a bit weird,
a lot older.
Yeah.
He was vigorous, apparently roughly handsome,
ooh,
experienced, and very confident.
Rugged, a rugged sort of warrior type guy.
His power made him an acceptable choice for her.
Acceptable, eh? Okay. Well, the physical and emotional attractions were strong for both of them. Cleopatra had also displayed to Antony the abundance of her realm.
Surely not on the first date.
But no, Egypt.
Oh,
you know, it's a rich land, isn't
it? Not that the other kind of realm.
No, it wasn't yep, the woman's realm. Well, it was a realm owned by a woman.
Yep.
She had another advantage in Caesarion, of course. Joint rule with Caesarion, remember him? Caesar's son?
Yes, of course.
Gave her regime the promise of that all-important quality for any regime, of course.
And for human beings generally.
Yes, very important. Stability, people.
Yes.
And of course, this is a period that's come after Rome's endless civil wars. So a bit of stability, yes please, I'll take
it. Very appealing. But Cleopatra had a real pain in her arsenal. And what I mean is her sister.
Wait.
Arsinoe.
Her sister, of course, yes.
Yeah. Now, so Arsinoe, of course, was still around.
Yeah.
Now, we know nothing about Arsinoe's physical appearance and whether or not she could equal her older sister in charm and glamour. She was a potential rival, though, to Cleopatra.
Mm.
But she was probably more useful to both Cassius and now Antony as a lever to control the queen.
Mm.
Something Cleopatra was well aware of.
So Arsinoe's life at that point must have been in mortal danger then.
Yeah.
I guess. So, I thought if I was going to place a bet, let's say, a bit of a morbid situation, but to speculate on, but I think if I was going to place a bet on Arsinoe's murder prior to Mark Antony joining with Cleopatra, I'd say 25 to 1, she's a rank outsider.
Yeah. So now, that's good, right? So she's less likely to get 25 to 1 chance he won't get murdered prior to Antony meeting Cleopatra.
In those circles, that's pretty good going, isn't
that's
it?
That's very good, yeah.
Yeah, so, but now, though, I'd have to say after that, the odds probably evens.
Yeah. So Cleopatra and Antony became lovers, and within a year she would bear him twins, a son and a daughter. The queen was confirmed in power, with Caesarion as king and co-monarch. But part of the deal with Antony, Cleopatra insisted that Arsinoe had to be removed. But she was safe in the Temple of Artemis, and it was illegal to touch her. But this is Rome, and that won't save you. On Antony's command, Arsinoe was taken from the sanctuary, the Temple of Artemis, as we said.
Which was sacrilege, of course. They didn't care, though, did he?
And was brutally, brutally executed on the steps outside of the temple. Now, Cersei from Game of Thrones has pretty much nothing on Cleopatra at this stage. But as we said, brutal times and brutal measures.
Oh, right, so how did they kill her then?
I slashed her to bits, basically. Hacked her apart on the... It was a lover's gift for Cleopatra from Antony.
Wow. Harsh times. Well, Antony, for his part, gained the wealth of Egypt and could now afford his beloved and much sought after war with Parthia.
Of course, the war Parthians. That Caesar had wanted to fight, and of course Crassus had fought and got himself killed him.
Yeah, so it's he really wanted to prove himself against tough opposition there. And he spent the winter of 41 to 40 BC with Cleopatra in her capital, in domestic bliss, shall we say.
Yeah, so it's sweet.
Lovely. Antony enjoyed a bit of fishing, of course, didn't he? Got the Nile right there.
He's not going to enjoy that.
Yeah.
The sun on your back, the Nile teeming with, fish and
crocodiles. So, I mean, he fishes much like we do, Matt. So, eager to guarantee the success of his fishing efforts, much like us, Antony would have slaves swim underwater.
Textbook. Yeah, absolutely textbook.
He'd then attach fish hooks to the end of his line.
Yeah.
And you can imagine what happens. It's something we do to sort of like impress our wives when they're not watching. We sort of down there and...
Yeah, just pull out the fish.
Oh, look, a trout. Where did that come from?
Well, it's one of us swims out the side of the other swim so no one sees.
Yeah. And so Plutarch tells us that Cleopatra easily saw through deception, much like our wives do, and on the next day sent one of her own people down who actually fixed a salted, you know, like sort of a preserved salted fish from the Black Sea to the hook instead.
So when he pulled it out, it was a cooked fish, basically.
Yeah, when he pulled it out, it was sort of like a long-dead fish-borne trophy to sort of general laughter by the surrounding onlookers. So his lover suggested that he give up. Since, as a great victor, he should fish for cities, countries, and whole continents. You know, basically feed the people. Imagine that. I mean, they sound like a right laugh, this couple, don't they? I mean, the winter nights must have just flown by with these comedy, two jokers in town.
A comedy like that, what can you expect? Now, Cleopatra flattered Antony and watched in admiration as he exercised out or drank or gambled with dice,
or,
of course.
Or fished.
The old dice gambling is a particular passion with many of the Romans, including his rival Octavian.
Mm.
They loved rolling dem dice.
Alia iacta est.
What's that?
Well, that's we mentioned about the dice, of course. It's very much in the forefront of Caesar's mind. You know, it must be a thing that's close to soldiers' lives in the camp, playing a bit of dice.
Well, Caesar, of course, loved a bit of dice.
He did, and when he crossed the Rubicon, you remember when he was going to take his legions into Rome, he said, Alia iacta est, or the die is cast.
Ah,
roll the dice,
yes.
Let's see what happens.
Let's see, he's rolled his dice and off he goes.
Yeah.
So, eating and drinking were particular favourites in keeping with
Good
the
choice.
Traditions of the Ptolemaic court.
Good choice. Eating and drinking, why not?
Basically meant a double helping of gluttony to table two. Woohoo. The couple formed a club called the Imitable Livers.
Oh, okay. So
a few years later, one of the courtiers involved in these entertainments set up an inscription dubbing himself the Parasite, calling Antony a god as well as inimitable as a sex god.
Oh,
yes.
Right,
this was effectively the tabloid gossip of the day. Antony and Cleopatra on the lips of many people.
Oh, it's highbrow stuff.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes Antony and Cleopatra would also
they lived a pretty hardcore lifestyle, basically.
They did. Well, you can
bit rock and roll.
If you got it, flaunt it.
Yeah.
They'd wander through the streets of Alexandria at night time, presumably with some sort of followers in the shadows protecting them. But they were dressed in the simple clothes of slaves.
Like a version of, an early version of Secret Millionaire / Billionaire.
We've got
Dave TV now.
Yeah. And Antony would behave sort of rowdily, mocking passers-by, you know, sort of peering into houses and that, while his lover, Cleopatra, is supposed to have sort of watched on. And the disguises were unconvincing by all reports.
I'm imagining Cleopatra here with a Monty Python type fake beard and nose.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, but well, a lot of
are there any women here?
No. But a lot of Alexandrians were happy to play along with this. They said, "Oh God, here they come, the fake beard." Look, replying to the mockery with abuse of their own. Actually, a few were even willing to let Antony pick a fight with them, and more than once, he's supposed to have returned back to the palace with bruises from these crazy adventures.
Well, you see, these guys,
they know
they're full of it.
Up.
They're full of it. I don't know what it is, but they're full of
it. They certainly know to have a good time.
Well, we should go back there now and kind of maybe get an idea for what Mark, Antony and Cleopatra were like when they played these pranks on people. A bit of an interesting experience.
Ooh, let's see.
Wooda, 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 wooda.
You're right.
I was doing like a sound that imitates going back in time.
Oh.
Is that useful?
Yeah, well, I suppose it sort of gives you a visualization for the listeners of the sort of the eddies of space time, right?
Yeah, yeah. We are, in the rusty teleporter.
Okay. All right, do it again.
Woody 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 woody.
That's very good.
Okay. That's the high production values you can expect from historical.
Sets the scene well. Oh, here we go. Oh, crap. He's coming again.
Who's coming, Sydney?
It's that bloody Mark Antony, and our ruler of all she sees, well, and smells round here, Cleopatra. They're in those disguises again.
Oh, what's he wearing this time?
Let's have a look. Hang on, it's coming out. So, she's got this fake red beard on, right, all bushy, and she's got a fake nose, I think it's a carrot, fake nose, even longer than her usual nosiness, right?
Oh.
And what's he got?
He must be very nosy.
He's wearing a wooden stump a fake leg. He's got a long blue jacket on, a fake hunchback on his right shoulder. He's smoking a pipe, and he's got this fake black beard. You can see the wire. And spectacles on. He's got a necklace of garlic.
Oh, it sounds very Gaulic to me. Well, love, you can't have him being upset. Just pretend he's a normal peasant. Don't let on, you know. He's Mark Antony, all right?
Quiet down, if he comes. Here we come.
Good to see you. I was pissing down the alleyway when I saw you. I am but a simple tradesman from Guild, lost to the shores, and seeking just some simple advice and guidance.
And what can I help you with, O weary wandering traveller from far away?
Oh, a simple and poor man. I mean, I am a simple and a poor man. I merely wish to quench my thirst in the tavern.
Oh, okay.
But I know not where one is, and I have no money to buy anything.
Of course.
Oh, woe is me, if only I could find someone generous to help me out.
Now there, General. Old Gaulic tradesman. Down the street there, you got the Fanny on the Hill, which is very good. You can eat there. Or if the Fanny's rammed, you can head up the other road. These guys offer rooms. At night, why not get your head down at the Cock and Swallow? You get yourself a stiff drink there. Alright, they'll definitely have a room, have a room.
Now I think you may be pulling my fake leg, my leg, with the names of these places. So, peasant, good man, I need a penny for you to buy me a drink to wet my whistle. Would you help a poor tradesmen, millions of miles away from my hometown?
Okay. Here you go. Now,
merci.
Be off with you, General. Wizened old man. Oh, no!
I fooled you, peasant. Yes. I'm not a Gaulic. I'm a Gaulic. Gaulic trader. Yeah. It's me. It's Mark Antony.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the lower classes are so much fun.
It's really very clever, my dear. Oh, gosh, did. Yeah, I'll be bugging. You know what? I had no idea it was you, Mr. Antony. That's brilliant, that.
Well, see you later, peasant. Yeah. You know, darling, I think I'm getting really good at this. I'm becoming a master of disguise.
Yes, you're so very clever, Mark. Hang on. He's still got my bleeding penny. Tight git.
One legend say she offered to treat Antony to the most expensive meal in the world. And when he scoffed at her...
What is that?
Well, wait and find out.
Oh, okay.
When he scoffed at her and said, bollocks, that can't possibly be true. Cleopatra had a very large pearl and a pitcher of vinegar fetched.
Delicious.
She crushed and dissolved the pearl in vinegar.
Right.
And then she drank it in front of the man.
More of a drink than a meal, but I get the point.
He conceded the point. It was more like a smoothie of pearls.
Well, he should have pointed out it's a drink and she's wrong.
Yes, he could have offered her a pearl necklace, of course,
he's a soldier.
Replacement.
Antony married Cleopatra, according to the Egyptian rite, although he was married at the time to Octavia Minor, wasn't it? Which was sister of his fellow triumvirate member, Octavian.
That's not going to go down well, is it?
No, probably not. No. He and Cleopatra had another child, Ptolemy Philadelphus. Glorious name. Making 3 in total.
Wow, 3 kids, hey? Mm. But due to strained political relations at home in Rome, Antony had to return, and he and Cleopatra would not see each other for a further 3.5 years. Love may well have been genuine on both sides, but at this stage, there was no overwhelming urge for them to remain together. Politics came first. Their other great love, their other great passion, politics
that's,
and power.
Yeah, that's right. And meanwhile, in Rome, the triumvirate was, well, no more, actually, because Octavian forced Lepidus to resign after the older triumvirate member attempted to take control of Sicily after defeat of Sextus. Silly move. Sextus Pompey.
Yeah.
Now in sole power, Octavian was occupied in wooing the traditional republican aristocracy to his side, back to the old status.
He started to attack Antony in order to raise himself to power. Climb on someone else's shoulders or kick someone down so you can raise yourself up. He argued that Antony was a man of low morals to have left his faithful wife and abandoned in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
So abandoned his wife in Rome with the children, of course, he'd had. And of course, by marrying Cleopatra, the Queen of Egypt.
To be with her. Yeah, to be with the what the people thought was the promiscuous Queen of Egypt.
So he was trying to get Mark Antony back. So Mark Antony had to come back and answer those taunts, really, from Octavian.
Yeah, so he was accused of all these things, but most of all of going native, which was an unforgivable crime to proud Romans. You know, the Romans were supposed to assimilate everyone else.
Like
the other way around. Exactly.
Yeah.
Why are you taking on someone else's culture when Rome's is so great? And again, with Egyptian money, this is, Antony did what he did best and invaded from his base in Egypt, a little place we all know and love called Armenia, of all places. This time, successfully.
Now, we forgot to mention the previous attempt on Parthia earlier. Antony had it handed to him. By the Parthians, without even a pitched battle.
Mm.
They took out his baggage train, basically, before as he was making his way across Parthia, which basically meant he was in starvation mode and he had to get his men out of Parthia. So Antony's previous campaign had been a bit of a disaster in Parthia, so Armenia was a great success and he was going to make the most of that.
And when Matt said he had Parthia early, had it handed to him, Parthia wasn't handed to him. His own defeat was very much handed to him.
Very much handed to him. Yes, by the Parthians.
Yeah. They've kicked a lot of Roman arse, so still undefeated.
Yep.
So a win in Armenia was very much needed for Antony at this point. You know, he needs to nail that particular ghost to the coffin.
Especially for a man known, you know, he's famous before being a military general.
Well, it's embarrassing, yeah.
Yeah.
And in the return, a mock Roman triumph was celebrated in the streets of Alexandria. The parade through the city was a pastiche of Rome's most important military celebration, of course. Whip everyone into a frenzy. For the finale, the whole city was summoned to hear a very important political statement. Surrounded by Cleopatra and her children, Antony ended his alliance with Octavian. Very dramatic.
Now, he distributed kingdoms amongst his children. Alexander Helios was named king of Armenia, Media and Parthia.
Well, that's territories which were under the control of Rome, wasn't it? So odd choices to dish out, really.
Yes. His twin, Selene, got Cyrenia and Libya. And young Ptolemy Philadelphus was awarded Syria and Cilicia. Now, as for Cleopatra, she was proclaimed by Mark Antony as Queen of Kings and Queen of Egypt to rule with Caesarion.
Very dramatic. Well, Ptolemy the 14th?
14th.
14th. Ptolemy the 14th. Caesar. That's the full name, which is son of Cleopatra by Julius Caesar, of course. Son of Caesar. That overrides Octavian's adopted son status. So that was the last straw, really, wasn't it, for Octavian?
Well, of course, yeah. That suddenly it's disinheriting, as its nature of the common, is disinheriting Octavian of his connection to Caesar. So Caesarion was declared the legitimate son and heir of Caesar. These proclamations were known as the Donations of Alexandria and caused a fatal breach in Antony's relations with Rome. specifically with Octavian.
And while the distribution of nations among Cleopatra's children was hardly a conciliatory gesture with Rome, it did not pose an immediate threat to Octavian's political position, actually. Far more dangerous was the acknowledgement of Caesarion as legitimate heir to Caesar's name. Because Octavian's base of power was his link, really, with Caesar through adoption, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which granted him much-needed popularity and, more importantly, loyalty of the legions.
The legions are the power.
Mm. To see this convenient situation attacked by a child born of the richest woman in the world was something Octavian could not accept. Bloody elitists. The triumvirate expired on the last day of 33 BC and was not renewed. Another civil war was on the cards.
Now, during 33 and 32 BC, a propaganda war was fought in political arena of Rome, with accusations flying between both sides. Antony,
who was in Egypt and being stoked into action by Cleopatra, who sensed finally she would get the ultimate power for her and her family, said what?
Well, yeah, Antony divorced Octavian's sister, and accused Octavian of being a social upstart, of usurping power, and of forging the adoption papers for Caesar. So, convenient. You know, really, really is digging, you know, kicking Octavian squarely in the nuts with this sort of stuff here. Octavian responded with treason charges.
Boom.
Of illegally keeping provinces that should be given to other men by lots.
Smack.
As was the tradition in Rome. And of starting wars against foreign nations.
Armenia and Parthia?
Without the consent of the Senate.
Well, they're going crazy.
So they are chucking things back and forth at each other here.
But Octavian still needed more support, as the Senate was still partly loyal to Antony. And the nail in the coffin for Antony by the Roman Senate was his will.
His will and final testament.
Yeah, a copy of...
final testament to him, indeed.
Yeah. Well, a copy of that will and final testament fell into the hands of Octavian. He basically raided the Vestal Virgins, Citadel, Matt.
Yeah.
Which was... essentially, a bit like a sort of like Harry Potter's Gringotts.
Yeah, the old, it was the place where all documents could be stored, really, wasn't it? Yeah,
for important documents. Yeah, and stole it basically, but it contained hellfire inside. Politically, Antony was leaving Rome to his children, reaffirmed the real heir to Julius Caesar. But the thing that really got them going bonkers here was that he wanted to be buried, wait for it, in Alexandria, not Rome. What's wrong with this guy? He's no Roman. Bit odd, really, wasn't it?
They were a bit obsessed with that. I always found that bit to be unusual with all the other stuff in there, why that bit drove them mad. But it did, didn't it? Drove
more nationalistic than the Scots. But that was the straw that broke the Senate's back, really.
The Senate, under the sway of Octavian, deprived Antony of his powers and declared war, bloody war.
Matt loves a good war, as you can tell.
Against Cleopatra, yes, not Antony.
No.
Against, even though Antony wound him up like a little shit, it was they declared war against Cleopatra, not him, because
that?
Octavian did not wish to be seen as attacking a fellow Roman, but knew Antony, if he attacked Cleopatra, would fight for Cleopatra.
Well, a bit transparent, but I'll see his point, I guess. Well, and in 31 BC, the war began. Octavian's loyal and talented, actually, General Marcus Agrippa, very famous general.
One that potentially we should do a podcast on Agrippa.
Yes.
He's pretty amazing.
Watch out for him in the future.
Yeah.
This Agrippa chap, he captured the Greek city and naval port of Methone, which is a very important port, and it was loyal to Antony. And then the battle, big battle you might have heard of it, the Battle of Actium, was the decisive confrontation for the final war of the Roman Republic, actually. It was a naval engagement between Octavian and the combined forces of Mark Antony and Cleopatra on September the 2nd, 31 BC. Octavian's fleet was commanded by Marcus Agrippa, of course, while Antony's fleet was supported by the power of Queen Cleopatra, of Ptolemaic Egypt. She had quite a fancy fleet. Very powerful.
The sea battle began shortly after midday. Antony was forced to extend his line from the protection of the shore and engage the enemy. Now, seeing this, Octavian's fleet put to sea. Antony had hoped to use his bigger ships to drive back Agrippa's wing on the north end of the battle line. But Octavian's entire fleet, aware of this strategy, stayed out of range. By about noon, the fleets were in formation, but Octavian refused to be drawn out. So Antony, in this sort of naval stalemate, was forced to basically make an attack. There was a bit of, you know...
He couldn't wait, really.
Dancing around the handbags to start with. Octavian wasn't having none of it, so Antony had to go on the offensive. The battle raged all afternoon without a decisive result.
And then Cleopatra's fleet, which was in the rear, actually retreated to the open sea without even engaging. A breeze sprang up in the right direction, basically, and the Egyptians' ships were soon buggering off over the horizon. Antony had not observed the signal. This was pre-planned, actually. He just believed it was mere panic and all was lost. This is pretty poorly planned, really.
Yeah.
So he just buggered off as well and followed Cleopatra. This contagion spread fast, as it always does in battle,
yes,
of course.
Yes, Phobos, the god of fear, spreads quickly.
Well, he cast his spell over this battle because, as we know, a backward step can very quickly turn into a out-and-out rout. So, yes, that contagion spread fast. Everywhere, sails were seen unfurling, and towers and other heavy fighting gear going by the board and overboard in some cases. Some fought on, and it was not until long after nightfall, actually, when many a ship was blazing from the firebrands thrown upon them, that the work was done. And Octavian had pretty decisively given Antony and Cleopatra a good kicking.
Absolutely. Now, the political consequences were far-reaching, as you could imagine. Under the cover of darkness, some 19 legions...
What's that?
And 12,000 cavalry.
Yeah.
19 legions were about 4,500 troops per legion, so a fair old amount.
That's a lot.
Fled before Antony was able to engage Octavian in a land battle. So so after Antony lost his fleet, he then lost his army, which had been equal to that of Octavian's previously. They deserted him. Sorted if you're Octavian. Buggered if you're Antony, though. But Antony fought on and tried to rally over a period of months his forces back to no success, and slowly made his way to Egypt. At Samos, Octavian received a message from Cleopatra, of all people.
There she goes.
With a present of a gold crown and a throne. She was offering to abdicate from the crown of Egypt in favour of her sons. She was allowed to believe, by Octavian in his reply, that she would be well treated. For Octavian was secretly anxious to actually secure her alive for use in his triumph when he returned home.
Parade her through the streets of Rome, eh?
Yeah, but she was not aware of this at that particular time. That was his motive.
Well, despite a victory at Alexandria, the date was 31st of July, 30 BC that was, more of Antony's men deserted after that little victory, leaving him with insufficient forces to really carry on the fight against Octavian. A slight success over Octavian's tired soldiers encouraged him to make a general attack, in which he was decisively beaten, unfortunately for him. He tried to flee from the battle, and as a result of another communication breakdown, he believed that Cleopatra had been captured.
Failing to escape on board a ship, he stabbed himself. Yeah. There's no...
Very dramatic.
There's no sort of, sugarcoating this. He tried to take his own life.
Right, let's move away. Where the ship's gone, right.
She's captured, kill himself. He probably should have double-checked his information before he did it, but he tried to kill himself.
Didn't mess around, did he?
But he did not die.
Turns out there was a bunch of horses he could have jumped on and rode away on.
Well,
if only he waited and looked.
He did not die, though, at once, and insisted on being taken to the mausoleum in which Cleopatra was locked up in, as she was sort of hiding away. And when he arrived there, you know, there is the classic scene of him dying in her arms.
Very sad, very sad.
She's probably there whispering to him, "Why the hell did you stab yourself, you twat?" But
can you just confirm the details of the will?
Yeah, yeah. She was shortly afterwards brought to the palace, and vainly she attempted to move Octavian to pity, you know, help us out, you know. But soon she realised her children were to be enslaved or killed. Octavian made this pretty clear, and that she was to go to Rome, and she realised then she was going to be humiliated in a public triumph, and then strangled at the end of the public triumph. So she realised her situation was hopeless.
Not a good situation. Well, then sadly, of course, depending on which side you're on, Cleopatra committed suicide on August the 12th, 30 BC. In one account, she put an end to her life by the bite of an asp, if you remember.
Mm.
And that sort of conveyed to her, secreted into her, in a basket of figs. And Octavian had Caesarion killed later, actually, that month, finally securing his legacy as Caesar's only son. Heavy stuff.
A bloody, bloody period of Rome's history comes to an end.
Yes, but Octavian's victory at Actium gave him sole and uncontested control, and he became Augustus Caesar, and the first citizen of Rome.
Yes.
So this victory that consolidated his power over every Roman institution marked the transition of Rome from republic to empire again. Hooray. And Egypt's surrender following Cleopatra's death marked the final demise of both the Hellenistic period and the Ptolemaic kingdom, as Egypt was sucked into and inhumed by the Roman Empire.
The actual Cleopatra legend continues to inspire people to this day. It is a bit harder than we might like to separate the real woman from the cinematic and poetical interpretations of her life. I see her as a clever leader that could stand equal toe-to-toe with any man of her time, in a time when it must have been incredibly hard to do so. Seeing her in a likeness of that of Cersei Lannister from Game of Thrones is perhaps a good starting point, for she indeed fought for the Game of Thrones, but like many of them, she lost it all in the process. If Actium had gone the other way, of course, she might have ended up ruling not only Egypt, but Rome as well. So she's incredibly close to actually pulling it off, as well as Mark Antony and Julius Caesar.
Yeah, so she did play a very good game.
She did indeed.
Yes. So that brings us to the end of our last episode of Cleopatra, number four.
Give us some feedback if you enjoyed that. We, you know, we could have squeezed Cleopatra into basically a one and a half hour podcast. Instead, what we tried to do was keep the episode short, and we didn't really want to speed through it because it's a very interesting period of time. You know, it involves Julius Caesar, Mark Antony. Yes, you know, it's the fall of the Roman Republic, the start of the Roman Empire, and the whole Ptolemaic piece as well. So,
and we just can't help ourselves, really, listeners. We just love giving you information. If the podcast is a bit too long, why not pause it? Come back to it.
Exactly. Just yeah. Do not be daunted by the size.
So up... that's not the first time you said that. So up...
Oh, thank you very much.
Up next is... a little fella called Robin Hood.
Oh, we've been promising this one for a while. It's been written basically by about episode two of Cleopatra, but we had to get through Cleopatra to get to Robin Hood.
Yeah, that's on the way next, so we're very excited about that.
We'll dust it off and get ready. It's pretty much ready to go, isn't it? So
we're excited. We hope you're as excited as we are.
Yeah. So after Robin Hood shot off his amazingly accurate arrows, we will... be looking to do yet more podcasts, and we've got a few ideas lined up for what they could be, but we do appreciate when you write in and give us ideas, and so please do contact us. Wayne will give you the normal address for to come with your ideas or any suggestions you may have for the podcast.
Please email us if you're over 50. Please email us at historical@hotmail.com. Or you know all the other ways to contact us.
Yes, we have Twitter, we've got Instagram.
Google historical podcast, you'll see everything there.
You're there. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we've got email as well. We're still yet to have a proper website, but we're doing just fine.
Don't need it. So please do try and contact us. Matt gets very excited about all messages that we receive.
We do.
And replies personally, sometimes with pictures. So please write in. Until next time.
Good day to you all.
Bye.